Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. Thanks so much for being with us. Our show is brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. And always good to have our good friend Kevin Flesh in studio. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Great, Scott. Thanks.
Great to see you. And let's talk about the legal world. What's been happening the last few weeks?
Yeah, so, I was telling you off air, I've been trying a lot of cases. It's been good. I've had jury trials at least one a week for the last 5 or 6 weeks. So I feel like I'm in the groove. It's coming up on my 25th anniversary of being a lawyer, and I'm like, I think I'm finally here. No, it's been really good, and it's been fun. Different jurisdictions have been all over the metro area to try in cases: Jeffco, Adams, Arapaho, Boulder. Denver. So we've been in all sorts of places, and the courts are up and running, and sort of a smattering of virtual and in person, and it's been difficult for us because it's where when you have to be somewhere and in what manner. So that's been interesting. There's been a lot more calendaring of, you know, this is an in person versus a virtual appearance, and so that's been a little change. Driving a lot more, seeing a lot of people on the roadways, doing silly things. But it's been good. I think that jurors have been great. I mean, they've been really. I'm always amazed when I finish a jury trial how smart members of the, and just level-headed and good common sense. What, even if it's against what I'm trying to do, at the end of the day, when I get done with a jury trial, I'm always amazed by our system and the fact that getting community members in a courtroom, and as much as I want to think that I can change people's minds a lot of times, the collective community gets it right. And that's what I'm so impressed by with our system. And even through all of COVID and all of what's been going on, and the fact that we're still having to wear masks when we're in front of people and trying to figure out if a person is a good fit or not, and picking a jury when you don't see half of their face.
Are they still wearing masks?
Yeah. So right now, almost all of the jurisdictions are allowing witnesses not to wear masks while they testify. So jurors get to see what the witness looks about. And it does make a difference.
Sure,
it really
absolutely.
Does. But I'm getting pretty good at body languages and other things to look at as to how people are reacting to questions and trying to get a sense of what they're feeling about things. Really trying to get people to verbalize their feelings. You know, a lot of times in jury selections, it's the nonverbal cues that you get. You know, somebody may hear what someone is saying, and they shake their head like, no, I don't agree. None of that is on the record, or maybe how they close themselves up, or they just look away in disgust. All of those sorts of things. You lose a little bit of that with the masks, but I'm really happy that we're able to do it, because there are just things that need to be decided by juries, both in the criminal side and the personal injury case side. Just finished a case in Denver on the PI side. Same thing. Jury made, they made a really smart decision. It wasn't as much money as I would have liked them to have ordered, but I also understood where they came from and where they got to the verdict. And so, I mean, that's all I can ask for, right? I mean, you want to be able to test your theory sometimes in these things and see how the community reacts, because it helps me in making decisions about how to prepare cases and what, you know, in the personal injury side, what cases are worth, and on the criminal side, what people will believe or not believe.
Sure. So when we're talking about the court thing and, you know, you representing people, and we're going to talk about kind of the dangers of self-representation, but are there ever cases where a person is wanting to represent themselves and you're the attorney for this side, and they don't have an attorney? They just want to do it themselves?
Yeah.
Do they allow that?
Oh, yeah. They absolutely.
Do judges say, look, we highly recommend you don't do this?
They do. Yeah. And I've had numbers of cases where the other side is trying to represent themselves. And So what I've found over time is, first of all, as a lawyer practicing in that situation, and they're normally county court actions, mm-hmm. so they're not as complicated.
Right.
But I have had district court actions where the person clearly has an agenda and the person does not want to have a lawyer involved. They think that they can handle it, and they never can. I mean, it's just not fair. I mean, think about anything that you do.
Sure.
If a person that you're trying to compete with does it on a daily basis and you're dabbling in it, it just doesn't work out.
Never want to.
What I have found though over time is the people that are in that situation that I'm essentially adversary of, if I can talk with them and find out what it is that's really motivating them, and then find out what it is and figure out what's really worrying them about mm-hmm. the situation and try to help them through it. Because quite frankly, it doesn't do me any good to completely legal maneuver them.
Sure.
Sometimes it does. I mean, there are certain things that, and I have this with lawyers that I practice against sometimes that don't do the sort of areas of law that I practice in, is I try to have a conversation with, you know, the train is coming down the track and I can see it coming. I know that you can't see it coming yet, but I want to make sure you understand where this train is going and how you're going to get run over. You know, and if you can have that conversation with, you know, I'm not threatening you in any way, but this is where it's going to go,
right.
And this is where I want you to understand what will happen. And as long as some people just are obstinate, they won't agree with it. At the other hand, most people are like, whoa, maybe that's not something I knew about. and I said, you know, I'm happy to do it either way, but I'm also willing to have a conversation about resolving this so that the court doesn't have to make a ruling,
sure.
or a jury doesn't have to make a decision. Normally people come to light. But I had a trial scheduled about a year ago with a lawyer on the other side that I've known for a long time. But he had gotten older, and I just don't think he was very precise in the way that he practiced. And he and I had a conversation about sort of his case and what his problems with the case were. And I said, I just don't think it's going to go anywhere, and I'm going to be able to file a motion to dismiss the case. And there's going to be fees potentially against you and your client. He didn't agree, but that's exactly what happened. And so I think at the end of the day, he was like, oh, maybe I should have listened to Kevin when we talked about it. But he didn't, and it was exactly the result that we wanted. And it was one of those situations where it would have been nice for my client to be able to not have to pay the additional fees. But sometimes that's what happens, and mm-hmm. it's just the way it goes. And, you know, I remember when I first started practicing, I would have practitioners that were older give me some of that advice, and there were times where I'd be like, no way, you know, I'm going to be able to figure this out, and I'm going to be able to recreate the wheel, so to speak. And sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't, but I learned from it. And so,
sure.
I mean, now we talk about the practice of law. It still is. I mean, I still learn. I learn something every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool to put away and say, you know, the next time this happens, maybe I should rethink about what I'm doing, or something that I do that is really effective that maybe
right.
I hadn't done before. And
right.
so, that's the conversations that I like to have, because those are the things that are interesting. The standard, you know, you get a criminal case and you get a good deal and you get it taken care of and you move on, and those are nice to mm-hmm. deal with, but it's the sort of quirky, unusual things that are fun for me at this point.
Sure.
Yeah.
Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk. Kevin Flesh is with us. The number 303-806-8886, and it's Flesh and Beck Law. So when we talk about people representing themselves, is the first thing that can possibly get them in trouble their mouth?
Yeah, it is. And it happens both in the personal injury cases and the criminal cases, where you provide more information than you really need to. And I'm not saying that you have to, like we've always talked about, I'm one of those guys that I provide everything that I need to provide in the sense of disclosures. If I have bad evidence, I provide mm-hmm. that so that we get it out there and we figure it out. But you can also do things to minimize the problems that you have by just not saying things. So, you know, in the criminal context, if there's always an issue of whether or not a person can ID you as the person that's got the criminal allegation, whether or not you did that.
Right.
And I see it all the time in driving cases, where the person can identify the vehicle that has caused an accident or has somehow done something wrong, but they can't ID the driver. And then the police show up at your door and say, hey, your vehicle was involved in an accident. And you say, oh, yeah, I was driving down, you know, 6th Avenue, and, you know, and you put yourself in the situation where these things have taken place. Whereas if you hadn't made that statement, they probably mm-hmm. couldn't have identified the driver. And even though they have your car, they need to have the driver. I mean, sure. It's the same way where we've talked about with the, and we don't get a lot of questions about this anymore, but photo radar.
Right.
Right? I mean, photo radar is a great tool for cities in getting money from their citizenry by taking pictures of people in their cars, and then they tie it back to the owner of the car. But if they can't prove in the picture that the picture is you driving the car, then the photo radar isn't of any benefit.
Yeah, because just because it's the car and the plate,
yeah.
doesn't
you can't,
mean you.
You can't have yeah. a car pay you money. It has to be the human being driving it. Right. So people forget that, they're like, well, they've got my car. Yeah, well, that doesn't mean that they have you until you admit that you sure. were driving. So that's a good example. In the personal injury side, you know, making statements. The classic one is at the scene of the accident when you're hurt, but you say, oh, I'm okay, just not really thinking. Or, you know, where you admit to something in the way of what took place that may not be actually accurate. Mm-hmm. Or not, you know, doing things and making different statements to medical providers than you had made to the police. Things like that. Being consistent in what you say is really important. And most people don't really think about that when they start the case out, and they're not being counseled like a person from my office.
Right. And then when you get into, and let's talk about personal injury side of it a little bit, you know, most people don't even understand their insurance policy. So to understand yeah. all the different amounts for different things, I mean, that takes some practice in negotiating that.
It really does. And it also, most people, that's why it's so important to get in contact with us early on relating to your case, because there are portions of, let's say if you have MedPay relating to your car insurance and how you use those resources, whether or not you provide that MedPay information to an ambulance, for example. Because people, you know, especially when you get into a serious accident where you're taken by ambulance, you're at the hospital. If you're cognitive enough to provide insurance, generally speaking, the ER and the ambulance will be asking for your auto insurance first. Mm-hmm. Because they want to get to that MedPay, because generally speaking, they get paid more from a MedPay policy for their services than they do from, let's say, your health insurer. Because most of the time, the health insurers have contracts with these particular entities, whether it's the ambulance or the emergency room, where they will pay, let's say they bill you for $1,500 for an ambulance ride, but it could be that the insurance company only pays $400. Well, MedPay doesn't have those sorts of contracts with an ambulance, so an ambulance wants that MedPay insurance because they get $1,500 versus the $500 with the health insurance.
Right.
So it's those sorts of things that I tell people, listen, when you're at the emergency room, give your health insurance if you have to give anything. If you don't have to give anything, don't give anything. We'll mm-hmm. deal with it on the back end to see who it is that gets billed for those things, because MedPay, for example, will pay for your copays too. And so you'll get money from MedPay in the event that you haven't exhausted it with an ambulance and an ER visit. A lot of people use it for that, and it's gone. So you can't use it for your treatment after your emergency room visit. So it's those sorts of things that we help people with as gotcha. We go through. And so that's where people think, well, I only need Kevin's firm to really help me at the end when I'm done with my treatment. But unfortunately, you lose out on some things where we could add value. And that's where getting us involved in the case early on and helping mm-hmm. you through doing the recorded statement so that we prepare you for that and so that you understand, because most people don't, yeah. they haven't been through it.
Sure.
And they don't understand what the insurance companies, what their claim representatives are trained to ask to try to use, especially folks in a situation where a claim rep, let's say for an at-fault party, is contacting the person that's the victim of the situation. They're going to be calling to try to minimize your injuries, try to minimize the fact that their insured is at fault, and just overall try to spin it so that it looks mm-hmm. like you have some more complicity to the injuries and the accident than you really do.
Yeah.
So those are the things you have to think about, because it's still an adversarial proceeding.
And you got to remember they're professionals at their job.
Right.
They're skilled at their job. Yeah. And so for you to try to negotiate that, and you may feel like, oh, well, they start out this and I got this much, so I did good. You might have left
completely
thousands
yeah, yeah.
on the table.
Yep. I mean, I've had I can think of right now three cases that I have resolved through settlements in the last 90 days where we started out on the case, thought it was a good case, did all the demands, did everything right, and we still got minimal offers. And once I filed the case and had their defendant served, we then got policy limits. And it was cases where it was $25,000 limits. It may have been, you know, there's a couple of different insurers that really just only write the $25,000 minimum limit insurance in Colorado. And their tactic is to delay, and only pay out when they ultimately have to. And in this case, they knew that they were going to have to. And I put them in a position where if I had gotten a judgment, it would have been way in excess of their $25,000 limits. And they recognized that they couldn't do that because their policy limit or their policyholder would have been on the hook for that. Gotcha. And they probably would have had to pay it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also look at, I would think the insurance company, if you go, this is Kevin Flesh with Flesh and Beck Law versus this is Bob Smith.
Well,
they're just going to.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of that goes on, especially with the claim reps that I work with on a regular basis, that you begin to have a relationship and a reputation with them, knowing that that's the situation. It's the same as other firms in town that are more they're firms that are quick settlers.
Yep.
Everybody
and
in the industry
knows that.
Yeah, absolutely they do. And so that's helpful for our clients because generally speaking, we get the best offers early on in the case. I just settled a case yesterday for a client that the statute of limitations runs next week. And he's been treating, he had a ton of, he had shoulder problem, he had a ton of treatment. He had about $80,000 in medical and workers' comp. And it was a complicated case. We were about to file suit and I finally got a really good settlement for this client yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it was just before they knew that I was going to file suit.
Yep.
And we finally got them to put all the money that they should have put on the case a year ago on the case. But it just sometimes takes some time and conversations and not threatening or yelling, but they just knew I was going to file.
Sure.
So they put the money that they needed to put on the case to resolve it.
Right. Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk. Kevin Flesh is with us. It's Flesh and Beck Law. It's fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H lawfirm.com. It's always a free consult as well on any legal matter, 303-806-8886. Do you also find people, when they're just trying to handle all this stuff, maybe, of course, they don't know you need to treat consistently so that you find out they fail to do that too when they're trying to do it on their own.
Sometimes what I see people when they are trying to represent themselves and work through the process, they try to cut corners on some of the medical treatment because they just don't understand the value in it. They understand sometimes, they're like, well, I've got a whiplash, so I'm going to go to physical therapy for some and then I'm going to do a bunch of in-home sort of exercises and try to take care of it that way. And the thing that they forget is about the witness potential of that physical therapist or the chiropractor to come in to talk about the totality of what they've done for treatment. Mm-hmm. Jurors aren't really compelled by you saying, this is what I did on a daily basis at home. because number one, either they're skeptical of it, or number two, they can't really understand it because you don't articulate it very well. I suppose if someone were to be videotaping all of their workouts and what they're doing for their physical therapy at home, that might be of benefit. But I've never had clients that have been willing to do that. And so what they do is what clients – and so they shortchange themselves on that in the sense that they don't think about the witness potential. They also sometimes get a little too cute in the sense of what they do for treatment. So maybe they get some chiropractic treatment, but then they go out and get massages. And massages are fine, but a person that gives you a massage normally won't come in and give a medical opinion about what exactly is going on that is affecting you. And they a lot of times are really helpful, but they don't get, you know, a medical prescription for those massages, or they don't have some other physician's assistant or somebody to come in and say why it's important. And then those people that are doing the massages are normally really difficult. They don't have any records. They don't keep very good records, and they don't want to testify, certainly, in court. And so it's those sorts of things that I keep seeing people thinking, oh, well, this is documentation, but it's not really documentation.
Right.
And so it ends up, again, the insurance company looks at it and says, well, this just isn't a very professionally managed case. And so they downplay it. And they have people on their side, in the sense of the insurance company, for nurses or other practitioners, medical practitioners, they'll come in and say, well, there's no real medical veracity relating to what this is. And so they basically just cut it out. And the way you build a case is by showing value in what the medical has been done and how it reacts, how you react to that, and how beneficial it is. And so if you can show reasonable treatment and that treatment is then charged in a reasonable manner, that then goes to the non-economic damages of your case. So if all of those are good, that means you're going to have the best potential value for the case in the way of settlement.
Right.
But if the insurance company can cut out a bunch of that medical, then it reduces the amount of the value of the claim and it reduces the non-economic side of it. So it's really all that you really have to think about the foundational pieces when you're having these cases. And that's where someone that does it on a regular basis versus you going out and saying, you know, I'll catch up with them closer to the statute of limitations.
Sure.
I can't help you fix the stuff because you're now 2 or 3 years out.
Right.
It's hard.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would think it's hard to keep the emotion out of it when you are representing yourself because you may feel, man, the right thing is this, but you still got to prove something, right?
Yeah.
And to me, you're going to let your emotions most of the time hurt you.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I get it. I mean,
well, sure.
the people are hurt. They know that they're hurt because of they think the stupid other driver, you know, wasn't paying attention, or they were. I always like the ones where the clients come in and they say, "This person intentionally hit me," because that's really hard to prove, right? I'm like, okay, well, what did they do? You know, how did they? And it turns out it was just an accident. And you depose the other person through the litigation, and they're like, you know, I just wasn't paying attention, or I was having a bad day, or I was changing the radio. I mean, just all stuff that unfortunately we do sometimes and people aren't paying attention, but it's not intentionally, you know, ramming a car. But, you know, it's the perspective from the injured victim that life is against them. And I completely am empathetic to that situation. But it's you've got to prove it, and you've got to have six people believe it, too. Mm-hmm. Right. And so those are where the clients we have to have a conversation with. Okay, if and again it's early on. It's always hard when I have the person that says they intentionally did something and they're coming in 2 days before the statute of limitations is run, because all of the evidence relating to video or wherever we can get some of the evidence to prove intentionality is gone most likely. It's mostly not available, and an intentional act. Can be real problematic for insurance coverage because if you do prove intentional acts, most insurance companies won't cover it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily want it. I mean, I know that's how they feel a lot of times, but at the same time, I have an alternative theory of just negligence because it's going to help us long run in the most readily available assets in the sense of an insurance policy.
Right. And then also, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, you know, about the insurance side, they have professionals there. You probably want to think, well, I trust them. They're looking out for me.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not.
They're not. And the only time that they are, really, the only time that you see a fiduciary relationship is when you're making a underinsured or uninsured motorist claim, especially in the sense of a car accident, where you're actually making a claim against your own company. Then they do have a fiduciary duty to treat you fairly. So. Mm-hmm. But that's then the real question is what's fairly? Because what happens with in those situations is that claims representative now isn't representing your interests. They're representing the interests of the insurance company, standing in the shoes of the at-fault party. And so although they still have a fiduciary relationship, it doesn't mean that they just hand over a policy limit to you. You still have the duty and the obligation to prove to them that that policy limit is the appropriate amount of money that they need to pay.
Right.
Because now they're essentially adverse to you in this proving liability, causation, and damages. Never made a claim. And now they're making a claim and they don't understand why it's so hard to get the money from the insurance company. And that's really hard to, and because then they get really resentful and they get really, really angry. And thinking about all of the things that they've done in the past, and then they get this insurance company that straight out denies them a coverage that they think they're entitled to. And so that's where people need help from us to say, you're right, that's true, but the reality is they have a duty to you and a duty to their shareholders. And that's the difficulty sometime in people understanding the difference and what we have to prove. Mm-hmm. That now it's our burden. Much like in a criminal case where the prosecution has the burden, the plaintiff in these sorts of cases has the burden to prove by a preponderance of the evidence.
Sure.
So tilting the scales, But it's one of those things where clients have a real trouble with their own insurance companies. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the at-fault party, their insurance company, it's an arm-length transaction. And you have to make sure that they believe you when you make a claim and that it's a viable claim and that you have damages and what they have to pay.
Right. And we are reviewing, if you're just joining us, reasons you do not want to try to represent yourself, really, truly, I feel, in any legal matter. But social media, I think, you know, there's so much that you give advice on early on when people call you, just advice of what to do, what not to do, those kind of things. Have you had issues where people have gone on social media and done something or posted something that hurt their case?
Yeah, people think that they're public Facebook pages and other things that the insurance companies won't go out and look at the stuff and try to find. It's so easy now, right? You do a search for the person's name. I mean, interrogatories, they'll ask you, what's your Facebook, your Twitter, or whatever handle you have, and they'll go look for stuff. And the one that it was most damaging is we had a client a few years ago that had this bad back injury and was complaining that they could barely walk. And then there was a video on their Facebook page of them dancing at a wedding, and it looked like they were in pretty good shape and could handle it. And you know, and it wasn't disclosed to us until their deposition. And then opposing counsel shows them this video and saying, "What's going on here?" Mm-hmm. And you know, the client blanches and says, well, you know, and is put off by it. It's one of those situations that people have to think about what it is that they're putting out in the stratosphere that they'll never going to be able to get back.
Sure.
And so in any case, I say always think about that because it can be used against you. Mm-hmm. And always assume that you're going to be recorded if you're out in public, period.
Yeah.
So pay attention to what you're doing, especially when you have a case pending.
And here's the thing, folks. It's always a free consult, as we mentioned. And you don't get paid unless you get them money. So why put yourself in more harm's way?
We do more work to get paid the same. And that's why people, I'm always amazed, like, I'll wait. I'm like, don't wait, please. We can help you because we add value.
Sure.
We just do.
Yep. Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, fleshlawfirm.com. Don't represent yourself. Give Kevin a call. Kevin, always good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legal Talk. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Don't go anywhere. Functional Medicine with Dr. Ben coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5-6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Hi, this is Chris Kane with 303roofer.com. If you're looking to put on a new roof because of hail, give us a call at 303-390-1382. We'll give you a cash price, which means you'll most likely get to keep some of your insurance money instead of giving it to us. It's your money, we know that, and we'll price the work accordingly. So give us a call today, 303-390-1382, or go to our website, 303roofer.com.
You're listening to AM 560, KLZ, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Phoenix, Arizona, and now Nashville, Tennessee. And Doc, they say you're going to be opening up an office here in Denver pretty soon as well.
That's the game plan. In the next, I'd say 3 to 4 months, we should be ready to roll that out.
That's pretty exciting. And along with me today is one of the co-hosts and fill-in hosts for Rush to Reason, Andy Pate. And he's along for the ride today, Doc. Now, the reason I brought Andy in is because, you know, he's in shape. He's got arms on him that are like, you know, cannons. So unlike me.
Now, actually, that's not true. I'm here because, you know, I've always wanted to be functional. I never have been. And I'm kind of hoping you can guide me there.
More on that dysfunctional side, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
So, Doc, tell us about functional medicine and what makes a difference. You know, what's different between that and a general practitioner?
Yeah, absolutely. So, when we start thinking about, and I've got live Q&A on my Facebook page every Thursday morning, and patients all over the world jump on, ask questions. And what I was prepping it today with before I got going, I said, you know, even as you're listening to other people and their questions and what they have going on and their thyroid or their gut or COVID or whatever it is, keep asking why. Keep digging deeper. Keep taking a step back. And I kind of prepped it too. I said, don't ask me what supplement should I take for this? You know, because that's the same thought process as what drug should I take for my high blood pressure? You know, that's not going to be fixing the underlying problem that's causing high blood pressure in the first place. And so just because it's natural doesn't mean it's fixing anything. And so with functional medicine, it's all about getting to the underlying why, which systems are out of balance, what can we do to truly correct these underlying balances so that somebody's blood pressure, it goes down and it stays down. And if you do what you need to do for an extended period of time, it's not going to come back up either.
Dr. Ben, when you're constantly asking why, does it usually come back to their nutritional and, shall we say, working out behavior? I mean, do you usually discover things and you can say, look, if you change this in your life, you're going to have a lot less of that problem?
Yes. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie. And, you know, yes, stress affects it. If you're on prednisone, it affects it. There's different things that can affect blood sugar. But the number one thing that affects your blood sugar is what you're putting in your mouth. And so what we've got is we've got to take a step back, figure out what works for each individual person. In that book, Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie, I don't have a menu, I don't have a meal plan, a diet, anything, because it's way more individualized than we ever knew. Some people, sweet potato is worse than white potato, but when we figure that out, then that person truly knows. I was talking to a lady today, 76 years old. Her A1C went from 5.7, which was pre-diabetic, down to 5.2, which is pretty much perfect in the 3-month follow-up blood work. And, you know, she said, you know what, I couldn't go back to the way I was eating. I've seen it. I've seen the reactions. I know that if I eat that, I know what my blood sugar is going to do. And once you know, it's really hard to go back into that cave.
Yeah, most definitely. And so, and once again, like you say, it's not one size fits all. It's not like you're out late at night, you know, selling that diet plan. Even in your book, you don't even have a menu, do you, Doc?
Absolutely not. We just had a 16-year-old girl come over today from Scottsbluff, Nebraska. And like I've always said, Dan, if somebody comes in that kind of late teen, early 20 range, almost every single time they have a digestion issue going on. And guess what? She's coming in for digestion. She's coming in for fatigue, her thyroid's off. She's actually homeschooling this year, doing her school online, and had to quit playing softball. She wants to play softball in college, and her body is just blamed.
Oh,
not functioning like it. Oh, you there?
Yeah, we just kind of lost you there for a second.
Okay. And so you know, it's her body was inflamed and just not working as well as it should. And so what we're going to do is the same thing with her as that 76-year-old to reverse her prediabetes, as the next autoimmune patient or anybody else, is take a step back, look at the blood work, look at the brain map, look at all these different aspects, and then come up with a game plan and go, okay, these are the seven systems that are out of balance. We know how to fix those. Let's go through step by step through this process.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, Doc, I gotta switch gears here a second. So, do you remember when we've been talking about COVID now for quite a while, and you were talking about the vaccine, and then you had mentioned something about a chicken study with vaccines and how that after the chickens were vaccinated, the virus mutated and it was actually harder for the chickens to fight it off, and they eventually died from it, and it was much harder for the ones that were vaccinated than the ones that weren't vaccinated. What I found really interesting, Doc, is you are on the cutting edge, because that story just broke on National Talk Radio today, that study.
They were talking about the same study.
Yeah, the exact same study, yes, sir. So, but you were probably months ahead of them on coming up with this.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's out there, and the information's there, and we know, and that research on the chickens, it was, you know, way back in the 70s they came out with the first vaccine. In the 80s they had to come out with another one, because basically it's kind of like antibiotic resistance, and so that virus evolved enough and it changed enough, and so then it from there it goes to, then now we're on the third phase of this vaccine for those chickens, and they're concerned, because if it evolves again and there's another one, they don't have any next step going at all. And so they're like, man, there could be millions and millions of chickens that just keel over because this virus has gotten so out of control.
Yeah, and so then just to kind of wrap up on that, there's a lot of talk now coming out too about how people that have had COVID are probably better protected than even those that are taking the vaccine. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got fact-checked on Facebook for posting the article from Israel and the study that they did. And so Israel, they've had upwards of 80% of their population has been vaccinated, and they all use Pfizer. So it's a pretty controlled environment, and it's almost this study in and of itself. And what the page said was that they were 27 times more likely to get COVID if somebody had just the Pfizer vaccine versus they had natural immunity to having the infection in the past. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty high percentage. I put that on there. I put a link to it, and I got fact-checked with some other video that wasn't even anything that I was talking about. And yet, you know, then it, boom, it pops it up there. It drops the algorithm changes. We don't get as many views. I mean, it's this whole thing that they put out there. But regardless, and I'm not saying whether to get the shot or not get the shot. I'm just saying that if somebody has natural immunity, we should have that ability to say, you know what, my body is going to be able to fight this off, and I'm actually more protected than the next person that took their shot. And so, whether somebody wants to or doesn't, that's their own personal, we should have religious freedom in this country, and should have medical freedom in this country. And so, you know, whether somebody does or doesn't isn't what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you've had the infection, you still have antibodies, you are very, very safe.
Dr. Ben, do you think that, you know, all these people who want to race to the vaccine, isn't this just indicative of a society right now that wants to race to another shot, another pill, another supplement, rather than first looking at what they've done wrong in the first place? Are you taking enough vitamin E? Are you eating right? Are you living right?
Absolutely. And we've been saying this all along. We knew this even when it came out of China, when it was in Italy, all these things, was that it is a disease of the old and the sick, and the ones that have diabetes and they've got high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease and they've got all these underlying issues. The news, the mainstream media, they love talking about and scaring people and going, ooh, healthy 30-year-old dies from COVID or whatever it is. But here's a couple stats. I was curious the first part of this week, and in all my free time, I jumped on the CDC website and said, okay, I ran through my calculator and said, okay, well, what are the percentages of people that have died each year, 2020, 2021, and their age groups? And so I looked at under 40, and it was 2% of the people that have died with COVID, and I say with COVID because, you know, a lot of times people, you know, have a lot of other issues going on when they die besides COVID, but 2% of the population that died with COVID were under 40 in 2021. Which is a pretty small number. And then we go up to 50, and it was only 6% of the people that have died with COVID in 2021 are under 50. So 94% of the people that have died in 2021 are 50-plus years old, and the vast majority are going to have at least one comorbidity, if not multiple.
That's huge. And so we've got everybody running around scared to death over something that, on the chart of things that'll kill you, is probably way down there.
But for the majority of people. But unfortunately, you know, we're talking the majority of people under 50. But here's the deal, is the majority of people over 50, unfortunately, like you were just saying, are not healthy, and they're looking for a quick fix. People ask me all the time, should I or shouldn't I, who should get one, whatever. And when I say, you know what, here's who probably should. And some people will be like, oh my gosh, he's saying you should or shouldn't. But here's who probably should is the 70-year-old guy. He's got a big pot belly, he's on CPAP, his blood pressure's high, he's pre-diabetic or diabetic, and he's got some breathing issues. You know what? Is it going to change anything at all, supplements or diet or anything? He might want to think about it. But the average 16-year-old male that's playing athletics and running around and doing everything the best they can, that's a whole other story.
Dr. Ben, what does it do for you when you see, let's say you see a teenager walking along the street, and you can tell this teenager already is not eating healthy, right? They're already putting on weight, even though they've got that young, you know, metabolism. And you see them walking alone outside wearing a mask.
Yeah, I think, you know, what a couple thoughts, you know, then you get into the social part of it. And,
right.
And, you know, what school I've got teenagers in multiple schools, you know, one a private school, one a public school, and you know there's a significant difference in what they're being taught in those different areas. And you know, even yesterday, my 17-year-old came home, and in his civics class, the teacher said, you know, if you're this one party that we have in our country, you know, you're racist. You know, that anybody that's part of that party is racist. And yeah, it's, you can imagine what he was talking about. And so, you know, that this is what's being told. And so then we're coming from that perspective, and then they're, you know, getting their news from certain outlets. And I had this really, this was eye-opening to me and really gave me feeling some sympathy for a lot of these people that are so scared. I looked at this survey, and people that watch mainstream media, whether that's CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, whatever it is, they were way more scared of getting an infection and dying and all these things than people that work, to the point where they thought that if somebody gets COVID, that it's a 50-50 chance of dying if you get COVID. If you go to the hospital and then you die, they thought it was 50-50 chance of going to the hospital and then potentially dying from there. And so, you know, it's like a 3% chance of going to the hospital. So way, way less. And yet that's what people have been fed all the time. And that's what the news is coming out. And so, you know, there was, you seen those three-seater motorcycle things?
Yeah.
There was somebody I saw yesterday that pulled up to the stoplight, and they had a mask on one of those. And so, you know, hopefully it was just like to keep bugs out of their mouth or whatever, but I'm guessing probably not.
Probably not.
Well, yet, maybe, Dr. Ben, maybe they were worried about giving the bugs COVID.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a little article that they were saying one of the zoos back east somewhere, that some of the apes in there tested positive for COVID, and they're, you know, so the big brouhaha about is it going to transfer between humans and animals and whatever else. But another friend of ours, he works in Wyoming for the Department of Interior and looks at animals, all kinds of stuff. And they found that you know, of the deer that they tested, it was like 30% of the deer were positive for COVID. And so, you know, when we start thinking that, oh, my gosh, we're going to vaccinate our way out of this, or we're going to reach herd immunity or whatever, unfortunately, that is bonk. There's no way we're reaching herd immunity. There's no way that, this virus is going to go away. It's a seasonal upper respiratory infection. Yes, it does affect people, and unfortunately, people have lost friends and family to it. And yet there's a lot of people that have done really, really well with it and have antibodies and can move on with their life. And so, it's one of those things. Whatever somebody wants to do, mask or no mask, shot or no shot, God bless them, and that's it. I'm good to go wherever you want to go with it. Don't try to tell me which way I need to go. I've got friends and family members that have done it both ways, and I'm fine. I don't try to talk them out of it. I don't try to sit there and get on a high horse one way or another. But here's the deal. We need to have a medical freedom in this country, and we need the ability to make decisions based on individuals, because that's what we do every day in functional medicine. Is we look at somebody and go, okay, are you predisposed to this? What is going to be your best course of action? Do you want to take that? Do you not want to take that? And that's what we need to be doing with anything. There is no one size fits all. There could be reactions of all different types for everybody. If you did the exact same thing on everybody, you could give them all vitamin D. And there's people every single day on my Facebook pages that jump on and say, I can't take vitamin D. I get nauseous when I take vitamin D. Like, vitamin D is pretty benign, and yet, I've seen many, many people that can't take vitamin D, but we then say, oh, everybody needs vitamin D, and like, well, maybe not. And so, there is no one-size-fits-all.
Yep, and you're listening to, totally agree with you, Doc, and you're listening to The Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. And to get a hold of Dr. Ben, give him a call at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. And if you'd like to join the program, it's 303-477-5600. And Andy wrote this note. He says, will the deer reach herd immunity? I thought that was funny.
So please forgive me.
70-80%, right? I think they reach herd immunity.
There you go. Okay, Doc, so I want to switch gears again. And I want to talk about sleep, and once again, go to their Facebook page, Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. Doc, you got like over 40,000 followers on Facebook. It's really impressive. And on the site here, it says quality sleep is a key pillar to optimal health. Why do 70% of adults have poor sleep? Great question.
Yeah, it's amazing when we start thinking about just what sleep does to the body. So let's start with the good things of sleep. Sleep is going to be the time when we regenerate bone, skin, hair, nails, joints, all of these different things in our body. We're going to start regenerating, rebuilding, repairing. That's why I always thought, like, you see George Bush, number two, when he started his presidency versus when he finished. Oh, yeah. And, he aged 20 years, and people, what was the big knock on him? He'd go down to his ranch, he'd hang out, he wasn't present, he didn't really care, whatever. And yet, even with that, he aged 20 years in his 8 years that he was in office there. And so, what happens? Well, I think a big part of that is sleep. And even if you're on Air Force One or in the White House, whatever, there's still going to be distractions, there's still going to be middle of the night wake ups, there's going to be late meetings with people from around the world, all types of different things. And so the sleep, I guarantee, gets out of balance. And, that's probably what we're seeing now with our current administration, that, probably some of that cognitive decline is we're going to be seeing from him not sleeping as well. But, that's a huge part of our immune system, of our ability to regenerate, rebuild, repair, and prevent injuries. And it's just a crucial, crucial piece for so many things, especially the immune system.
I'm not sure that's true, though. I've seen a lot of, press conferences where he was sleeping.
Yeah, but those are more naps,
Okay.
I can find research where it shows that, there's a lot of benefit from taking a little power nap every day.
Hey, Dr. Ben, what are some of the things that people do that causes their sleep to suffer? Maybe things they eat or maybe things they do in life?
Yeah, so we call it sleep hygiene. And basically, it's what are the things that are you're doing that are constructive or destructive to sleep? And so one of the things that has really evolved over probably even the last 10 years is going to be the screen time. And so many people, you know, especially if you think about that, like, 50-plus-year-old person, maybe they're getting some empty nest, or the kids are in high school now, and they're not hanging around as much anymore, or they're out late, and it's quiet, or they, you know, maybe don't have a great relationship, and they don't talk much, and so one's on this device, and the other's on the other device, and so, you know, then they're just Googling and searching and watching TikTok or whatever the heck they're doing, and then all of a sudden it's 11 o'clock, and like, oh, I should probably go to bed, and then they try to go to bed, but they've been looking at what's called blue light. And right now, I'm outside, and I'm looking up at the sky, and the sky here in Colorado today is blue. And that tells our brain, it's time to get up. It's time to go. Let's be on the ball. And then at nighttime, or as you're going into dusk, or you're sitting around the campfire, or the lantern, or the fireplace, any of those things, you're looking at reddish, orangish light. And that's telling your brain, hey, it's going to be time to shut it down. Let's go ahead and start calming down and getting ready for bed. I don't know if you've camped much. I love this analogy I've got. I went to school in Dallas, and in Dallas, you know, in Colorado, you go camping in the summer. In Dallas, you don't go camping in the summer. We had 60 days straight over 100 degrees. You know, we thought this was a bad summer. It's crazy there. And so we would go camping January, February, March, things like that, and that was the really nice time. And yet, sun's going down at 5:30, so you're sitting around the campfire, 5:30, 6:30, 7 o'clock, and after an hour and a half of looking at that reddish, orangish light, that campfire, you know, it's bedtime. We'd sleep for like 14 hours straight when we would do that because we'd get tired. And you're like, okay, how much can you just sit looking at the campfire? And so we have switched our brains to be stimulated by this blue light from your devices. And so you've got to shut those down at least an hour before. You've got to, when you're getting tired, you've got to give your body a chance to go to bed. So many people, have you ever done this, Dan, where you fall asleep in front of the TV?
Yep, that's me.
And then you get up, you brush your teeth, maybe you put a couple dishes in the dishwasher, you tinker around a little bit, and then you go to bed, and what happens?
I can't sleep. I'm tossing.
Can't go to sleep.
Yep.
Yeah. Then you're like, that's so weird. I was just so tired. I mean, I literally could not keep my eyes open in front of the TV. And yet now I'm just lying here twiddling my thumbs. Well, you get this second wind and your adrenals kick in and you get cortisol flowing through your body. And I always think about it like in boot camp where the drill sergeant comes in the middle of the night shooting blanks and going do, 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 do. And everybody jumps out of bed like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Okay, get your guns, dude, run around. And so, you know, that's almost like what your brain's doing when you fall asleep and then you wake up and then you're doing some stuff and it's like, oh, I guess we got stuff to do. So might as well get those hormones going through to keep us up and running. And so you get this second wind, and then you have to wait for that to get out of the system. So if somebody is tired by 8:30, 9:30, before 10 o'clock, you know, for a while, you need to go to bed a little bit earlier and give your body that ability to shut down like it's supposed to and not stay revved up. And then you're up till midnight and then waking up at 5:30, and it's just this whole system that gets out of balance.
Yeah, I'm totally with that. Totally understand. Okay, Doc. So I was showing Andy this picture on your Facebook page, and he said, "Is that sand on his hand?" What? So if you go to the Facebook page, this is crazy. It's almost like the tongue thing we talked about last week. What is going on with this person's hand? I don't think it's sand.
Yeah, it looked really healthy to me. I was thinking push-ups on the beach.
Yeah,
this is obviously a good thing. I was wrong.
I was showing my 14-year-old how to do some full butterfly pull-ups this morning, and you know, he's like, "Oh, that's cheating, Dad." I'm like, "Well, I just did 20 in a row. Come on, what do you got, buddy?" But you know, and then he's like, "I'm going to tear my hand." I'm like, "You'll be all right. Come on." But you know, this is not calluses. This is not sand. This is what's called psoriasis, which is an autoimmune disease that is basically attacking the skin. We'll see it a lot of times in people's legs and their calves, and like huge chunks of skin will flake off. And this guy, his hands would peel, and this would come off, and then it would come back. And it's an autoimmune condition. There's over 190 named autoimmune conditions, including MS, rheumatoid arthritis. I was just reading about autoimmune alopecia, which is where the hair falls out. But the World Health Organization has 1,700 reports post-vaccine for that. All types of different autoimmune conditions out there, but this is one to the skin, and it can. The problem is that it can spill over into psoriatic arthritis, which is going to be arthritis of the joints around those irritated well. So this gentleman, it came actually in his 70s, and which is usually a younger thing that we see, but we see autoimmune all the time. I have multiple type 1 diabetics right now. They develop type 1 diabetes in their 40s, which is used to be a kid's autoimmune condition. Type 1 diabetes used to be almost only in kids, but now we're seeing it in adults.
Dr. Ben, here's a really dumb question. I just want to hear your smart answer. A lot of people, when they see flaking of the skin on somebody, they immediately think the old leprosy kind of thing. They don't want to touch them. Is this in any way, shape, or form contagious? I don't think so. But, I mean, what would people be worried about?
Yeah. So here's the thing with skin, and I really want you guys to think about this. If you've got a kid, a grandkid, if yourself, anything, if somebody has acne, a lot of times acne is going to be more of a hormone issue or a gut issue. So they're having issues in their small intestine lining. If we see skin issues like this, like eczema, psoriasis, autoimmune, any of this stuff, that is also a gut issue. So it's not from the outside. I don't care what dermatologist you go to. It is not going to fix this issue. It has to come from the inside out. And that's what we look at with everything, is we've got to take a step back and we've got to figure out where those underlying imbalances are. But no, if it's not topical, it's not a topical disease, it's affecting the skin, just like type 1 diabetes is affecting the pancreas that secretes insulin. This is just the part of the body being attacked, but autoimmune is not contagious. But you've got to figure out the underlying why, because just taking prednisone, just taking some type of methotrexate, which is low-dose chemo, or any of these other autoimmune conditions do not fix the underlying why. If you have to be on those drugs, so be it, but you sure as heck better be fixing your underlying imbalances in your body.
Hey, Doc, if I've got some of these issues going on, or a loved one of mine does, how do I get a hold of you? How do I start the process? We got about a minute.
Absolutely. So call 970-282-1173. If you have loved ones in the Phoenix or Nashville area, we can get you a hold of the offices down there as well. And you'll call and you'll speak to one of our new patient coordinators. And their job is solely to make sure that you're going to be a good fit for the program, that you understand what we're going to be looking at, what the process, the duration, all of these things are looking like. And then from there, we'll sit down and we'll come up with a game plan. And we'll say, you know what, this is what's out of balance. Let's get moving our feet and get you fixed up.
Sounds great. And Andy, thank you for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun. And Doc, as always, great show, a lot of great information, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you so very much.
All right, guys. Andy, thanks for jumping on. You guys have a great rest of the week.
Thanks. You too, Doc. Okay, you've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. To get a hold of Dr. Ben, call him at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.